Today on our show,
we're doing our latest top 10 last 10 for the middle of 2022 with thanks to Cine Realist for the idea.
Let's go. Welcome to episode 381 of the Countdown Podcast, folks. My name is Wayne.
And my name is Paul. Welcome to the podcast. We count down movies and sometimes television in order of awesomeness, so you don't have to. And today is our traditional Top 10 Last 10 show, where we count down 10 of the most recent films that we've each seen that we haven't covered in the main reviews to give you a bit of a spread on other things you might like to watch or, dear God, avoid.
As is most of the case on my list.
My list this week is pretty poor.
Some
bad life choices I've made, Wayne.
Oh, God. One of many for me.
So, largely we're warning you off certain films, but towards the top of my list, absolutely some strong recommendations.
You too.
So, yeah. That's what we're going to be doing today. We hope you'll stick with us for this, one of our more popular kind of shows that we do. So thanks if you're a first-time listener for joining us. I'm sure you're used to the madness. And without any further ado, let's kick that off with a segment which starts every show. It's called The Recount.
Who wants a recount?
Who
wants a recount?
Who
wants a recount?
Who
wants a recount?
The recount tells us what everyone said this week. Paul, hit it.
Well, what everyone said was about last week's show from top-level patron Adam Malua gave us the topic of the battle of the directors, Spielberg versus Cameron versus Nolan versus Tarantino, which, based on their filmographies, was the superior director. We crowned Nolan the winner to much consternation amongst the Countdown Facebook listener community network. Links in the show notes if you want to get involved in the discussions. That said, you won and won comfortably for about the upteenth time in a row, Wayne. So no more talk from you about how much you lose.
Was it two in a row?
Three, I think. Okay. Now, at least, if not four. Mina Harker said voting for Paul 2 weeks in a row for having aliens where it belongs.
Oh, yeah.
That was about all and the only person who voted for me. Jesse Dixon said voting for Wayne because, now here's a hot take, all his Tarantino picks were better than Reservoir Dogs. I'm sorry, Paul.
Thanks, Jesse, but damn.
What the hell are you? No!
Wait, it was like, hold on to you. And he's like, why am I holding on to this?
Yeah, fuck this shit. Fuck you and Sean Board.
Yeah, Jesse, that's a very hot take. Terrible, terrible. The man himself who gave us the topic, Adam Malua, said, at first I was like, I can't vote for Wayne because he left out T2. Then he blew my mind with having Saving Private Ryan higher than Paul. It was that point I creamed my pants and knew what my decision would be. Also, Inception was way higher for Wayne. Thanks for the episode, boys.
Word.
Thank you for your support, bro. Adam. David Powell, top-level patron as well, and Facebook listed community moderator said, easy win to Wayne, the prestige, a much stronger number one, and he didn't include that overrated Cameron vanity project, T2. Wow.
I'll take theater.
Yeah, I love the way that you got a vote there because you forgot it. Not because you don't like it. Jon Snow, aka Julio from the Contrarians podcast, another great show, do check them out, said Wayne outpolled Paul by having SPR higher. That alone earns him a vote. But on top of that, and this is what I knew would lose me this week, no Pulp Fiction, Paul? What the fuck?
Yeah.
Fair enough.
But it was such a tough thing. It could be anyone's.
Well, it's a tough week. Jason Barr said, great list with some big omissions. Hateful Eight is a big favourite of mine, but Paul gets it for Aliens, Jaws, and Terminator 2. Oh, I did manage to find one other person
who
voted for
Many
me.
Others.
Nevertheless, smash the shit out of it. Wayne with another big win. Well done, sir. 56 votes, I think 61% of those to you.
Thanks, man.
That's it for this week's recap. Let's do this then on the other side of this music cue, the latest Top 10 list.
Top 10
is the subject of this week's Countdown. Now, if you've ever heard one of these before, we just review 10 films that we've recently seen without any other linking criteria, not genre, not director, not actor, not nothing.
Starting at ass and ending, hopefully, in good shit.
And we'll let you know where we change from being ass to good shit. In other words, where we start to recommend these films.
That's right.
Now, Wayne, you've said and implied pretty heavily that you didn't have the best of runs
the last three months or so.
Nor do I, if I'm brutally honest. All right, how about then? All right, lead us away.
You go ahead.
My number 10 is, you and I both a big fan of the long take, Wayne.
Oh, yes. Huge on that.
Films that go to the trouble of blocking and setting out, and everyone has to hit their marks, and long, long takes, and some of these films that now take it to the nth degree by having the longest of long, long takes, and then don't even show you where the edits are in between, if indeed there are any edits.
Right.
And my number 10 is a bullshit, really piss-weak version thereof, trying to do exactly that. It's called Night Ride from last year, and it's directed by Stephen Fingleton, household name. And stars a bunch of other household names: Mo Dunford, Joanna Ribeiro, Jared. No one you've ever seen before. Apparently, Stephen Ray, the guy who was in The Crying Game, does a voice on the phone, but that's about it as far as known talent goes. And this basically follows one dude on one night who, literally, if you like him, someone driving around in one shot, unbroken, having conversations on his car phone. See Lock, because that was a much better version with Tom Hardy.
Oh, my God.
But this one does the whole one-shot gimmick. You know, obviously it hides the edit when it goes into the side of the car or whatever
but
else.
Something disgusted you about this film.
It's so fucking boring. It's meant to be like this action thriller. There's like two scenes of remote action in it. And one of those scenes, it follows outside the house while there's supposedly a fight happening inside. You see glimpses of through a window as the camera pans outside of it.
And clearly it did not work.
Oh, God, it sucks.
Night Ride. It's supposed to be a thriller, but it's a one-shotter, and it's mostly dialogue. Is that what I'm hearing?
And look, it's got 3.2 out of stars on Letterboxd, which I am just befuddled by. It is so boring, this movie. If you like watching someone talking on their car phone, and by the way, it never even hangs it up, so it's just like talking suddenly stops, and then there's no stabbing a button or saying end. Suddenly, it's just calling the next person. What the fuck kind of technology is this?
Have you noticed that in movies, Americans don't ever say goodbye? Like, they're like, the end of the call, and they just hang up. In this case, he doesn't hang up at all.
No.
But like, that's really weird to me. It's like, okay, see ya.
This one's a British film, but nevertheless. Yes.
If I was making a ransom fucking call, I'd still say bye at the end.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you very much. I hope you're having a great day.
Yeah, so, apart from this, of course, bye. Yeah. It sucks. It sounds sucks, like a... and it ends, and it's just the crappiest ending, and there's just nothing entertaining about this movie at all.
Man, with long takes of someone driving, it sounds very Jim Jarmusch-ian. You know what I'm saying? Ghost doggish.
Ghost dog, yeah.
Yes, so sounds like a bag of dicks.
It wasn't Ghost Dog, it was Way of the... What was it called? Way of the Samurai?
Ghost Dog, Way of the Samurai,
Ghost Dog, colon, Way of the Samurai.
Colon. There you are.
That was Uni Haskins. All right, that's my number 10. Look, it's not... Like, I don't have anything here that's like a one... This is like a 1.5 star. I could see what they were trying to do. It just needed to be way more entertaining. It just show way more on the screen than just talking about it on a phone call, which is the big problem.
Was it a COVID film, do you think?
Yeah, for sure.
Is that what's going on? Yeah, okay, all right. All right, well, my number 10, similarly balls, but far higher profile. It's called The Man from Toronto.
Thank God, because you said to me, hey, Paul, this one might be fun.
That's
we could do this on
exactly
the show.
That's exactly what I thought, okay? Like,
and I was like, suck my dick.
And as well you should have, and as well I should have, sucked your dick. Because this is, look, the premise, to me, didn't sound bad. It's about this underworld where there's a famous interrogator named the Man from Toronto, played by Woody Harrelson, who has an assignment to go torture someone who has information, but instead the dude who turns up is Kevin Hart because he took a wrong turn, and he
sounds plausible.
Well, that all itself is like, I'll let that go, because it's a comedy, Paul, all right? Supposedly. And he gets mistaken for the Man from Toronto, so he has to torture someone, and he plays along so he doesn't get killed himself by these bad guys who are in the room. And then the police make him keep up the charade so that they can catch the actual Man from Toronto. And then, of course, him and Woody Harrelson both meet up, and supposed hilarity ensues, except it doesn't in any way. Have you seen this?
What? No.
Good, because check it out, right?
I will never.
Look, I had a level of hope for the film because the trailer looked like it might be funny. I wasn't expecting fucking 40-year-old version.
The trailer did not
look
like it was going to be funny.
Oh, you know, but you hate Kevin Hart. So
I do.
You see? So,
as an actor, I just hate his shtick. He does the same. He plays the same role every fucking time. Kevin Hart plays Kevin Hart.
Well, in this movie, he's playing like a washed-up sales executive. Like
Kevin Hart is Kevin Hart.
And you could argue any comedic actor has a similar sort of shtick in terms of the way they're presented.
But then there are comedic actors who can act, who when they're required to can play someone different and seemingly be different, i.e., for example, Robin Williams.
Robin Williams, sure.
But if you sell yourself as a comedic actor, like Robin Williams did initially, and then become dramatic, like Steve Carell is doing that now.
Steve Carell, yeah, yep. Another good example. So, Ken has a range. Can
absolutely.
Do even Ryan Reynolds, as much as we give him shit for playing Ryan Reynolds all the time. Buried. He is a different person in that movie.
He's a real actor. And this is the thing. This is a giant piece of shit. there's one sort of somewhat interestingly choreographed shot fight scene in a gym in sort of the third act. But that is the only good thing I can say about it, because it actually did look kind of good. But this film, all the way through, I'm like, I guess someone could find it funny. Ooh, I'm doing
if
that.
You're not finding comedy funny. Holy shit.
I'm so
shit.
Forgiving. Exactly. And then the shit story and crap dialogue and stupid premise and shit gag after shit gag just wore me down. And then it started at some stage actually actively pissing me off. And I was like, nope, this is just a piece of shit. How is this a major Netflix release? There must be a market for this kind of film somewhere, and it made me think that maybe Netflix has this.
Well, people will watch it because it's got Kevin Hart and Woody Harrelson in it.
Well, this is what makes me like interested. Do they have a lowest common denominator formula?
Which is why they're now running into massive amounts of debt.
But then the other thing is like, and look, this hasn't released like on Netflix yet. I haven't seen it yet. But The Gray Man looks like something I'd go to a cinema for.
Gray Man is the most expensive Netflix film ever made, from what I've heard. Heard stories that the budget is north of $200 million.
You know, given the Netflix platform and the money they've spent over the years and, you know, the stock and all that sort of shit, I'm not actually going to shit on them as a platform. They're the most prominent platform, I would say, for streaming.
So they got the best UI.
Yeah, because Disney
And they release
sucks.
The most content.
Yes, exactly, right? And so I still pay for Netflix.
Yeah,
I
mean, me too.
Like,
yeah.
And, but I wonder if they aim for mediocrity and somehow that gives them the best rate of return. I'm not sure how this works, right?
Whatever their model is, though, it's clearly not working because they're bleeding subscribers left, right, and center.
But I think that might be a case of, and I'm sure our Netflix and Swill friends can probably tell me about this, but in my head, I think they've just reached market saturation because you probably, like Netflix was so big for so long and had so many subscribers that there's no people left on the planet for them to hit. And now these people are jumping ship and going to like Amazon or Your Mother's Flats.
Yeah,
you know, whatever, right?
More and more people will go to Your Mother's Flats, that's for sure.
Oh, absolutely.
Or other streaming alternatives.
Streaming actually works in that joke. Sorry. Okay.
Only when you're dating Wayne.
What is not working? All right, anyway, so, all right, so, yes, so, like I said, the pitch, I would have, if I was a Netflix exec and someone said, hey, so it's a murder thing, but not quite, and then the funny thing
I would have said, no, sorry, Kevin Hart.
See, that's it. I think you'd have made a better Netflix exec than me. Not that that's a surprise to anyone. So, yes, The Man from Toronto is shit. Obviously, I'm not recommending it. It's my number 10, but it really is, like,
terrible.
Offensively shit.
Well, speaking of offensively shit, arguably this could be my number 10.
And
really rail at my number 10 Knight Rider because it's a low budget film.
Sure.
My number 9 is a middle budget film with Liam Neeson once again playing 15 years too young.
Sure.
And this time in a film directed by Mark Williams. It's called Blacklight.
Right. Now,
this is not on your list, is it?
No, but first of all, you can't just say Liam Neeson. You have to say Liam Neeson's cock.
Right, sure.
And secondly, I only heard of this film. But do you remember that controversy that Liam Neeson went through where he actually said he was, because his friend got raped by an African-American person, he walked around with a kosh saying, I'm looking for any black bastard. That's what he said on, do you remember that?
Jesus Christ.
Yeah,
he said that.
And then they went and made a movie called Blacklight. I'm like, what the fuck? So what's Blacklight about, Paul?
Blacklight is...
I assume there's no neon. What's it about? What's it about?
It's so shit. Like, this is the kind of film which makes you question whether you should bother doing the podcast anymore. Like,
oh my God.
So bad.
This is obviously in his set of post-Taken, like, yeah, exactly. I signed for every
it's
movie.
It's a better film than Knight Rider in terms of looking at how technically it's put together,
because
how it's shot.
More money.
Yeah, there's more money. There's more talent behind the camera. But it is absolutely paint by numbers, exactly what you expect. Safe as fucking houses, piece of shit, Liam Neeson thriller that happens to be called Blacklight. I don't fucking
for no
know
reason.
Why. It's probably the shadowy government organization that he works for.
So what is he? Is he like an operative?
So he's a shadowy government agent who specializes in removing operatives whose covers have been exposed.
Oh, so people who are burned.
So he works for Aidan Quinn. So he's seeing elderly Aidan Quinn here.
I used to like some Aidan Quinn.
Yeah, Aidan Quinn is somehow hatching a plot to take over the FBI from within.
Oh, he's dirty.
He's a bad guy, and he murders this other agent who gets wind of it.
Sure.
And then sets upon this news reporter that the agent spoke to, and so now Liam Neeson's involved in this, but he saved his life back in Nam.
Got
literally.
It. That's history. Back in Nam.
Sorry, it's a joke between Wayne and a lot. And it is just... Liam Neeson, I get it. He is a good-looking fella for his age.
I do him.
He has gravitas. He's the best thing about this movie just because he can act. And
yeah.
No fucking one else around him. Even Aidan Quinn looks like he is. He's shit. When's the last time you saw Aidan Quinn in anything?
The Assignment was a great movie.
Yes, 15 years ago.
Yeah,
20 years ago, maybe.
Yeah, actually, don't. I couldn't name another movie. He's done.
It's just like he's come out of retirement. He's just getting a paycheck. He could give two shits, and neither could anybody else in this movie. They're so bad and boring.
Does this?
And then, but then when we get to the action sequences, you can't hide the fact that this is an old man doing things now, and we're doing the fucking seven cuts for one punch bullshit. It's painful.
Real what? Liam can't.
No, he can't deliver any more action. He's too old. It's not a knock on Liam Neeson. It's a knock on. Stop fucking casting him.
This is how the machine works, man. Like, if you've got any level of fame, you'll still, like, you know, the Bruce Willis thing.
Yep.
You could argue he's lost his effectiveness, unfortunately.
Well,
due to
we know why.
Yes, unfortunately, due to the illness. But as a studio, you're like, is Bruce Willis going to be in it? That must be worth a chunk of money.
I would be stunned. In fact, I'm going to look it up now, Wayne, while you vamp. I'm going to be stunned if this film made any fucking money whatsoever.
Well, what's interesting about the Liam Neeson-ness of this part of his career is that Taken was the bomb.
Yes.
He went and did 42 of them after that.
Mm-hmm.
And then he started doing broke-ass projects like all the other ones, like A Walk in the Shadows.
Walk in the Tombstones.
Among the Tombstones. But then there was one movie that he did with Ed Harris that was the shit, and I can't remember what it was called. Tits. It wasn't called Tits, but it was really good. The one with
Ed Harris. Wishes it was.
It was it was surprisingly good. And so every time one of these things come out, you're like, well, maybe it'll be one of those films.
Well,
you know?
This film cost $43 million to make. So I said mid-budget, $15.5 million return. So we might finally be seeing the end of this bullshit. It's enough, Hollywood. Learn your fucking lesson. There's another one out called Memory, which at least has the gimmick to it that he's taken so many blows on the head or copped a bullet in the head or whatever it is. That he can't remember shit he's done. And
so maybe it's more dramatic.
Back. Yeah, so I think maybe it's a bit more dramatic.
Interesting.
Will I watch it? I don't know. This was so bad. It may have put me off Liam Neeson action projects for a long, long time.
You know, if you've got a noted piece of shit, $43 million is still quite a bit to spend on that. You know, especially like, you know, $15 million return, sure. Part of it is a tax write-off. Sometimes studios
not even close, man. That would have had to take $60 million, maybe $70 million to make money.
Yeah, you're right.
That's a big loss.
Was it theatrically released?
Yeah.
Know?
Ugh. Yeah, it was.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah, okay. I think it came out in January, which tells you everything you need to know.
Yeah.
So yeah, Black Light, piece of shit, move on.
Fair enough. Now, Paul, I saw a Australian film.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
And it's your number 9.
That's right. Now, I was told by a few girls in my group that this film, it's called How to Please a Woman, Paul.
Surprised you needed to bother.
Very kind of you, but you got to keep your game sharp. No, it's...
Whereas for me, required viewing.
Disagree. He's the one who's married, everyone. Aussie film. I like to back the Aussie films.
What?
Since
when?
Well, no. I like to. I just don't. Here's the thing, people. When you've got a film industry that is small, like the Aussie one is by comparison to the US one.
Sure.
Most of it will be shit. I'm sorry. Most of it will be shit. Okay? When you do, but that means that when one really good one comes along, you're like, oh, look at this, Lantana, and so on. Like, you're like, look at that, and it gets some actual, like, you know, you treat it with more respect. How to Please a Woman is not one of these. It is about a 50-something woman who has a business idea to launch an all-male house cleaning service. However, when her business grows out of control, she has to, basically, the whole thing is, these guys come to your house and clean, and fuck you! And fuck you.
Seems a bit
on the nose, doesn't it?
Risque.
The way that they play it is that she's like, she says, no, I'm just going to use these, because she's got business problems and yada yada. And so one of the guys who goes to clean the house, he doesn't really know how to clean the house, but he's a good looking man. So the woman tries to fuck him and he fucks her back. All right? And she didn't expect that to happen. And she goes to him, that never happens again. But then all the women in her group and her clique say, oh, this guy came along and he fucking ate my burger and yada, yada, yada. Right? She doesn't actually say that. But, and then she goes, no, but who needs an actual cleaner?
And then the other woman said, what do you mean, ate my burger?
Well, the other women go like, oh, you know, this guy came along. And she's like, yeah, but I only do a cleaning service and it happens to be done by men. So who needs their house cleaned? And they all go, well, I can clean my house, but can any of them fuck me? And then she's like, well, no, none of them fuck, and none of them book her. So then he talks to the men, and they're like, Well, we're happy to fuck women because we're men. And not all of them are good looking, by the way. One's old, one's fat. Two of them are sort of not
bad.
Pretty
sure all the clients would not all be good looking either.
No, and that's an interesting point, Paul, because something that used to be... I noticed this personally, right? Aussie films, here's some scoop for you people, always titties. There's always titties in Aussie films, and I don't know what it is. No, there's a lot of titties, man. Trust me. If you went for like a titty quotient in Aussie films, it's high. And I don't know if that's because that brings butts on seats.
I think it's called confirmation bias, Wayne.
I may have looked for the titty ones, but I've noticed that a lot, okay? And there's a lot of middle-aged titty here, which I did like. So there's that, okay?
Can confirm.
But what this ends up being is because she goes to the men and says, hey, these women are trying to have sex with you and I'm sorry I did that to you. And they go, no, we're fine. We're men. Let's fuck them, right? That affords the lead character the you know, like she's not an evil person by making a prostitute service.
She's not a pimp.
Not a pimp, exactly. Right?
I don't know. It sounds like pimpish behavior to me.
She winds up going, well, if you guys are okay with it and the women want to pay for a bang, then cool. But then there's aspects of the film where like one of the guys is really bad at it because he's a tradie. And so, not because he's a tradie, but because he's a typical larrikin Aussie male who doesn't really know how to fuck a woman, right?
So, shout out to all the tradies listening to the show right now.
No, look, according to a lot of women that I've spoken to, you all can fuck really well. So well done, fellas. But the problem with the movie is it ends up being like it's trying to empower middle-aged women to take control of their sexuality, right? But it doesn't come off. It doesn't like it ends up just being this bullshit kind of let's have a party on the beach and yeah, you're empowered now and she's got a groove back and have some champagne, cunt. You know, that kind of thing, all right? And it's not, it just absolutely does not.
Sounds fucking shit.
It's shit house, all right? Like I said, an Aussie film needs to be remarkable enough to earn the support, and this just isn't there. However, this did get a theatrical release.
Did it?
And I heard about it, not through any marketing, on the grapevine. So perhaps, Paul, perhaps I'm just a fucking man and I don't understand. Okay? So that's what's probably happening. It does look like, to me, quality-wise, it looks like someone's second attempt at a film. That's what it looks like to me.
All right.
So, you know.
Won't be rushing out to see that one, that is for sure. Neither should you rush out to see my number 8, which is the first of several horror films on my list. And unfortunately, it's the sophomore film for the follow-up to the guy who directed Host, which was my favorite horror film of 2020. That was a film that was about, basically filmed during the pandemic, and it was about a haunted Zoom call.
Oh, very cool.
Fun, quite scary in places. Well done. Big tick to Rob Savage. So he decides to follow that up with a film called Dashcam, which at the start of the pandemic, it follows this indulgent, quote-unquote, and self-deluded live streaming improv musician, a woman,
right,
who abandons LA for London, steals her ex-bandmate's car, and makes the fateful decision to give a ride to an elderly woman who is not what she seems. That's the ride up to it. I want you to imagine the worst fucking character, the most hateful, ugly on the inside and out,
we're talking about
awful,
the
horrible person you can imagine.
The musician?
Yes.
Yes.
And making a film about that person. And expecting you to get behind it.
So she's the protagonist?
All you want is her to have her face ripped off the entire film.
Wow.
This is the kind of person who walks, they do this thing, during the pandemic, walks into a shop refusing to wear a mask and starts arguing about it.
Oh, she's a Karen.
Yeah, she's a Karen. She's the worst fucking Karen there is. Every Karen thing you've seen online pales in comparison to this film.
What?
And you're asked to follow this character and give a fuck about her.
Do you know what this means? Look, I don't know, but it means that the director or the writer was a Karen themselves and they're looking for you to get behind them.
Potentially. I don't know, but it's just such a bad decision. So you're already offside. And then when a couple of relatively effective sort of horror sequences happen, because this film covers the gamut, it just goes in ridiculous sort of levels.
American film?
I think Rob Savage might be a UK filmmaker, actually.
Yeah, okay.
It's set in London.
Karens are everywhere.
The main character is an American. And I guess the level of indulgency here is it's kind of summed up perfectly during the end credits. So, because she apparently really, obviously she's not this person in real life. I'm not for one second the actress. But she is that in real life. Her name's Annie Hardy. She is an improv live streaming YouTuber who drives around LA rapping her thoughts about shit.
Oh, someone pitched this to her as a movie and she said yes. That's
and
what
then
going on here.
I have to assume I've not looked for her channel. I couldn't.
Yeah.
But they've amped it up to the nth degree, which if that's true of what she's done, then sort of hats off that she's prepared to play a really shit version of herself. It's kind of like watching in This Is the End, watching...
Danny McBride?
Not even Danny McBride.
Or playing himself.
Yeah, who's the guy from Arrested Development?
Michael Cera. Michael Cera.
Is just prepared to go, yeah, I'll be a real asshole that everyone
that's
hates.
That's true, yes. Yeah, but he was really famous, so it means more. This is just
is a way to get famous, right?
That's what I'm saying.
Clever.
But yeah. Oh, okay.
But I have to assume she's a relatively normal person, and therefore she's doing a great job of making you hate her. But the problem is the film wants you to follow this person for 80 fucking minutes or 77
total
minutes.
Total miscalculation.
Oh, my God.
Total miscalculation. That's
and then
like
it gets into all the stupid tropes of shaky cam, and you can't see what's going on, and glitching footage, and oh, fucking hell, it sucks.
Can I ask? Is it presented that everything is from the dash cam? Well, or is it cut away? Like, is it, or
no,
is
there's
it
lots of
like
different bits. Like, at one point, she's holding the camera.
Oh, so it is
else.
Like a, not found footage, but like that documentary style thing. Oh, okay.
She carries the camera in with her places, and it's fucking shit.
It sounds,
such
sounds
a disappointment.
Like a bag of
it hurt. I was so keen to watch this movie. It is an absolute turd and will be one of my worst. If I don't go out and see lots and lots of other low-budget horror films, we'll be on the worst 5 horror films I've seen this year. It's such a fall from grace.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
So the elderly woman she picks up ends up having some shit, and then people are trying to capture her to get her back, and they're prepared to kill her, and then there's fucking... It literally covers every genre within there. Like, it's so bizarre.
Let me ask you...
It sucks. The end... The very end of the film,
yep.
Over the end credits, it's just one of her raps going for like 7 minutes, rapping to the credit crawl of people that she's worked with. Fucking awful.
Look, that sounds terrible. At what stage did you, in the film, did you go... Oh.
Well, initially I was like, this is going to be a joke, right? You can't...
Yep.
Cannot base a character like this and think this is going to be okay and make this the person that we're... The protagonist you're behind.
It sounds like an idea that was like interesting to start with and then went awry. Like, look at this YouTuber. Bet I can make her famous.
But she breaks into her ex-bandmate's house at the start, and the ex-bandmate's got a girlfriend. Like, she's a woman, he's a guy. She's like, what is this woman doing here? And he's like trying to make excuses. Like, yeah, so she won't be around long. Sorry. Yeah. And then the main character's response is, what's up with that cunt?
Really?
That level of awfulness. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, makes me kind of freak out.
You wouldn't watch it anyway, but I almost say to you, watch the first half an hour and tell me what you think of this character. Almost.
Yeah, that's almost worth the morbidness of trying that. Yeah.
So that's my number 8, Dashcam. What an absolute disappointment.
Fair enough. Mine also was, some would say, it was a disappointment, and some would say, why did you expect this to be good? And the answer is Brad Pitt. So, everyone, my number 8 movie is The Lost City.
This was actually going to be my number 7.
Oh my God.
We had a discussion beforehand about what, it turns out we watched a lot of the same movies. We don't normally do this, but I had a feeling this week and I was right.
Every cream puff that he had
so
on his list,
I'm
I had seen.
Right here at the same level with you.
All right, good.
I really didn't like this movie.
Dude. So The Lost City, everyone, is about, it's got Sandy B in it, right? And she's a reclusive author. Her name's Loretta Sage. And she writes about exotic places and her popular adventure novels that features a handsome cover model named Alan, who is played by Channing Scrotum.
Mm-hmm.
Now, while on tour promoting her new book with Alan, she gets kidnapped by fucking Harry Potter, like an eccentric billionaire, Daniel Radcliffe, who hopes he's actually looking for an actual ancient city's lost treasure, and he maintains that because she had some knowledge of the actual machinations or some fucking Sanskrit shit that he had, that perhaps she could help him actually find that place. It's a really weird premise. Now, I saw the trailer, and it's very Brad Pitt heavy. Okay, so I'm like, hey, it's a Brad Pitt film. Okay?
Did you? Oh, no, I knew it wasn't.
Oh, dude, right? Now, it starts okay. It does not start like a bag of shit. There's a few dick jokes.
I would agree. The best part of the film is the first 15 minutes or 20 minutes.
Yes. Spoilers. Don't see this film, but I'm just going to tell you right now. Brad Pitt is in it for about 30 seconds.
He's in it for like 5 minutes.
Yeah, 5 to 10 minutes. And he is cool as shit, right? Like, it's cool. This motherfucker is 60 years old, people.
Is he that old? 57 or something.
Something close, but he looks fucking...
Don't cheat me out of 3 years, motherfucker.
Okay, bitch. He's around that, but he's fucking fantastic. And then he just gets drilled. That happens.
Which was obviously going to happen, but...
To
would have
you,
been,
Paul.
Yes. She thought he was the main character. I'm like, he can't be around because this is about those two, not him.
Well, that is that in fact is the problem. It was good for the time he was on screen, and then it...
But it wouldn't have worked
there,
if he stayed on screen.
But I wanted to see Brad Pitt doing all that shit.
You always want to see Brad Pitt doing that shit.
Yes, I do
want to
see Brad shit. So, look.
You want to see Brad shit.
That's actually a Cockney rhyming slang term. If you have to take a shit, they often say, I've got to take a Brad. I've heard that before.
Wouldn't it be Brad Pitt?
Yes, but a thing of Brad shit.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? So anyway, now here's what I wrote down as I was watching this movie. One, God, Sandy B's face looks so plastic at times. I don't know what's going on here, but she's had a ton of work happen.
Of course she has.
Look, I'm sure it's very different when you're a Hollywood starlet and you age and you got all that stuff, but good God.
It's just time to start playing mums.
Yeah.
There's great roles out there for mothers.
I mean, you could argue that she wouldn't have got this role and whatever money came along with it if she hadn't done all of that shit. And I don't know what exactly that fucking equilibrium is in terms of you and your value. But, you know, there's that. It's got jokes that should be hilarious, like Sandy B staring right at Channing's dick and doing a monologue. That could have worked, but it didn't work.
Nah.
Like, it's just okay. And then these people trying to console themselves after the death of two henchmen, that was kind of okay. But as a rule, although the characters, I won't say were without chemistry, that these two, I will just say that it just wound up being a pile of shit. And I can tell you this, I was actually looking forward to, like, this when this came on, like, I saw the trailer, I'm like, oh, you know, I could...
Again,
I could,
you flow this as a topic.
Well, sort of.
As an episode review,
I was like, nope. I know, and I even thought, well, perhaps I can go, this can be a nice date with someone, like, I go see a movie with this, right?
No.
Well,
yeah, but you could go see it anyway. You don't need to do it for the show one. You're allowed to take someone on a date for a film that's not on the show.
But I was so glad I didn't, because this movie sucked hairy balls, everyone. It's such a piece of shit. I think I'm just clamoring for more Pitt in my life. And I'm looking forward to Bullet Train.
Oh, me too.
But
my number one most anticipated film for the second half of the year.
You know what I think happened? Brad's like, I need another house or maybe half a boat or something, so I'll just do this 3 days on set. You know, I think that's what's going on here. And, you know, more power to you, Brad, but this just did not work at all.
No, it didn't. 100% agree. I didn't find this film funny. It just felt like a really broke-ass bullshit version of Romancing the Stone.
Oh, yeah, you're right. It's a shit version of that, and a wildly shit version
of
that.
So it's like, look, we've had 35 years or so since Romancing the Stone. It's like, okay, we can make it so no one's going to fucking know. Yes, we do.
Bro,
when you're as old as I am, we know, and it sucks.
Absolutely, and I loved Romancing the Stone. I even like Jewel of the Nile. All right, I love both those.
Yeah,
movies.
One's not as good, but yeah, I remember seeing Jewel of the Nile at the cinema.
Oh yeah? Yeah, I think I did as well.
Well, when the going gets tough,
that's right, mate.
The anti-tough make this piece of shit film.
And now you have an outro song. All right.
Did cross my mind. My number seven is a very divisive film, and this is one I pitched to you, Wayne.
Bring it.
And I'm very glad that we did not see this one, because you would fucking hate this
movie. What is it?
Like, you would be so angry with me if I made you sit in the cinema and watch this film. I might have been angry at me if I made us sit in a cinema and watch this film. It's called Men, from director Alex Garland.
You were selling that, and I was like, oh, fuck.
Yeah, all right, what is it? The trailer is great. So this film basically follows Jesse Buckley plays a woman whose husband has just died.
Right.
Arguably, as the film presents, either committed suicide or accidentally fell.
Got it.
But after a big fight, he struck her, and then he's trying to get back into their apartment after she locks him out, and he falls past the window in a great shot from the trailer.
Mm. Okay.
She goes out to this little village in Cornwall or some place wherever, and hires this beautiful country mansion from
Cornwall, UK?
In the UK, yeah. It's a UK film. And it's going to be there for a couple of weeks kind of to rest, refresh herself, do a little bit of work from there. She's some kind of finance manager or whatever else.
Right.
But just kind of take time to reset after this hugely traumatic event. And then she starts being followed by this naked dude.
Right. Been there, literally, unfortunately. No, I'm kidding.
Tackle, hanging out, whatever else.
Oh, really?
And what you gradually realize, now, here's some big spoilers for Men. If you're not interested at all, I'm not going to spoil the end of the film except to allude to kind of the craziness that takes place. But if you don't want anything more than that, please skip forward 2-3 minutes, okay?
Okay, go on.
Every man in this town, from the guy who rents her this house to the naked dude to the guy, the policeman who comes later to arrest the naked dude to the local tavern's bar guy behind the bar.
Yep.
They're all played by the one actor, Rory Kinnear.
Okay.
With varying degrees of excellent makeup.
So okay.
There's a vicar in there as well, all played by the same actor. So
one
same
dude
guy.
Is all the dudes.
And so there's some real messages here. And what gets this to number seven on my list is I was thinking about it a lot after I watched the movie.
All right.
But by the end of the film, this goes, because the film presents itself in one or two ways. Obviously, men are bad, okay? It's about misogyny. And
yep, we're all men.
Yep, men treat women badly. And sure. They all talk to her throughout the course of this film with a certain degree of either contempt or superiority.
Sure, yep. Sure.
And that's the what's kind of
making. That's the thing that put me off it. I'm like, I'm thinking exactly what fucking movie this is. Go
but
on.
By the end, it does this fucking absolutely insane out of nowhere. Not out of nowhere, because it starts weaving in some folk horror as well. Sort of this Green Man vibe, which you read about that stuff. Mm. But by the end, it just goes to this place which I cannot reconcile what the film was trying to say. And so I went and did some reading afterwards.
Yeah.
And Alex Garland said, I don't want to be able to tell you what the film was. And I don't really know what the film is either.
But
I want people to read onto it themselves.
Ah, fuck off.
So for a long time, I thought it was her, like, it's her guilt manifesting in terms
into
of
all these men?
Yes. And then I thought, oh, you know, it's a supernatural thing which is built upon her guilt, has been attracted to her guilt. But the final 15 minutes of this film are unfucking believable. There's not a single person I know who could watch that 15 minutes and go, oh, it makes perfect sense because everyone would be like, the fuck.
So it makes no sense.
Literally, one man falls over, suddenly grows a mangina and starts birthing one of the other characters that's come before it.
What?
Which even that would make sense if it was just her watching it, but we've had another female character in the film interacting with two of these men at once.
Someone has gone to the David Lynch school of
script
writing.
It does make zero sense and it's infuriating, I have to admit, from there. But is it thought-provoking? Yes. Hence number 7. Did I enjoy it? No. Does it have some sumptuous visuals and beautiful cinematography? Yeah. Not good enough. Not good enough at all. It's the worst Alex Garland film by a long, long way.
All right. So she is a chick who is persecuted by one man and then eventually many men who are the same man.
Yep.
Do you get any kind of explanation why
it's all
the same
man? Even
the
end of the film does not explain itself at all. In fact, it adds another layer of questions to it.
Fucking shit. All right, you need to know what you're making before you make it, and then when now you do make it...
Apparently,
even if
he claims he was writing this film for 15 years, so before Me Too started, but it feels like very much the Me Too film movement.
I don't mind that. It still needs to be well executed. You know, it's just like, ugh.
So like, the wounds that start... So at one point, she literally splits open one of the men's arms with a knife.
Right.
And that actually reflects what her husband... When she finds her husband after he's fallen off their building, he's impaled on a fence and his arm's been split. So the wounds start to reflect her husband. So I'm like, ah, this is her manifestation. And okay, I can kind of see that.
All right.
But all the characters now have a split arm.
Oh, what does that mean? What does that mean?
Exactly.
Shit. All right, fuck that shit. Thank God. Yeah, I would have been pissed.
Oh, mate. Yeah, you've been so angry. So yeah, sorry. I hope you haven't spoiled it for anyone who wants to see it. But there's some feedback in the Pop 10 section where people are talking about this film just going, what and the fuck is basically the presiding / predominant
See, here's
reaction.
The thing. I know you don't like the movie Mother.
This is as close to Mother as it gets.
But Mother has a theme, and you can say this is person is that person, and this person represents God, that
Problem
person
is,
represents Mother Nature. That's all right.
Mother's also boring, whereas this film is not boring. It's very tense for its first two thirds. And I'm like, okay, where's this going?
And then it turns out nowhere.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, piece of shit. Okay, everyone, number 7 is a film I know Paul has seen, and it's had a bit of chatter on our page in the past. Interceptor. Now,
it was also on my list, but lower than this.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, well, like I said, I mean, I've had bigger pieces of shit. It is a Netflix film starring Thor's wife, and it's about terrorists who want to launch a
nuclear... Elsa Pataky?
Elsa Pataky, I believe. It's about terrorists who want to launch a nuclear attack on the United States with stolen missiles. So now when the terrorists attack a remote offshore missile interceptor platform that could have stopped these missiles... An officer, Elsa Pataky, defends the facility because she's courageous and resourceful. Now, first of all, she's some kind of captain and she's had a past in the army where she was harassed and busted down. She's got a bit of a past there. That's like part to flesh out her character. She is the single least believable military personnel member I've ever seen.
For the American military, it does seem odd that she has an Australian father and a Spanish accent.
Yeah, I didn't actually know.
Colin Friels was her father, did you know?
Was he?
Yeah.
Really? Yeah. Oh, Colin Friels is a once popular Aussie actor,
yeah,
everyone.
From 30 years ago.
Yeah, from a long time. Oh, well, okay. I guess good on your call. I guess her mother's probably... Anyway, now, there's no way that anyone who's a remotely supposedly high-ranking officer even just looks like that. And I'm not saying she's too pretty to be an officer or effective. I'm saying she looks like an Instagram model. And... She,
that can happen, Wayne. Instagram models can be officers in the army.
Not like this, Paul.
Oh.
Not like this. All right. So, and I was actually saying to you that she for
that's your biggest problem with this movie. I've got some schooling to do.
Oh
for
no,
you.
No, no. There's many bigger problems with this. She actually looks kind of weird to me. I don't know what it is. She looks either her placement as the character in this movie She looks weird. Might be the hair. I'm not sure. Anyway, apparently, she, like I said, she was harassed at some stage. Not exactly what show she's supposed to be. And what really gets me about this is, among all the bad acting and the horrendous dialogue, we have now the most possibly hilarious fight scene between a 50-kilogram woman and a gorilla of a man. Admittedly, they did not go overboard because she took her licks. And I know I talk about this a lot, but like, I laughed out loud when she uses his hand to disengage the slide on a handgun so she can stick the sharp part of the handgun in his eye.
That was funny.
That was actually funny, all right? That's why I got to 7. Yeah, pretty much that scene. He also shrugs off 2 point-blank rounds, so that's how big a man he is, all right? Like, boom, boom. He's like, oh, yeah, whatever. And the fight would have been all over, you know, before this, but I was sitting there going, all right, you know what? I'll keep watching. Another ridiculous fight scene between a martial arts guy and some pussy guy on the side who wouldn't shoot him because he's a pussy. I don't know what that is. Like, the other male in the room is a pussy, so if pussy are men and she's a strong woman, maybe that's the thing that's going on here. There is, of course, Chris Hemsworth cameo. Which
goes on way
too
long.
Doesn't work. It does not work. And I think at that stage, I'm like, yeah, this is pretty bad. Every line she tries is not good.
The problem with this film is that it's really low budget. It's largely one set. It's in this one set. Yep. And then we get really shit CGI for them. Yep. It's this interceptor base.
Yeah. There's one outside bit and there's a bit of fighting.
Otherwise, it's meant to be Die Hard. You know, she is the John McClane versus a group of terrorists who've taken over this building.
Mm-hmm.
Except it's all around one room, the control room, and the bad guy's trying to get into the control room.
That's right. They
do, how she gets them out again, and then how she tries to stop these missiles being fired. And
yeah.
Luke Bracey is the bad guy. He's fine.
He's fine but as an
not
actor.
Great.
No, but the bad guy is an idiot because
yep.
it's not Hans Gruber here, my friends.
No.
Okay.
I said fine, not Hans Gruber.
Oh, no. He, like, the bad guy, for some reason, for no reason, in fact, he broadcasts his image around the world, and he's not even ransoming anyone. He already got paid.
Do you think that in the event this film was successful and his plan worked, and in working with the Russians, he bombs however many cities, and it would have destroyed nowhere near, or killed nowhere near as many people as it claims it will?
Yeah.
Anyway, because someone did that math online, I saw.
Righto.
That the remnants of the US wouldn't spare any expense
to
murder his ass, no matter how far he ran.
And the thing is, his whole motivation is that he's some trust fund baby or some shit, right? And it makes no sense.
No, it
because
doesn't.
Now he's like, now the world will know I'm the biggest criminal on the... Like, dude, if you're going to do this, one, you're doing it to get paid. He already got paid in this film. He's actually being paid already. So now he's just broadcasting his image so it gives the rest of the world a face to hunt down. And he says that the family name was Sullied. And that's why he's doing this. Did you think this might sully the family name a bit worse, mate? This is fucking horseshit.
The rationale is terrible. The acting, not even Elsa Pataky and Luke Bracey, but beyond those two. Everybody who's playing the American president's room and the general and that, they are so bad and so wooden. And this is directed by and co-written by Matthew Riley, who's a famous Australian author who's written a whole bunch of novels that are adventurish. Very much.
I've heard his name.
I think this shit works in a novel form where you don't see it and it's in your head and you're imagining the dialogue delivered better.
Any chance you've read that?
No. No, I did read one of his books. I can't remember. Conquest or whatever it's called. Mm-hmm. Or Arena or some shit.
Is he a reasonable writer?
I was okay. It's airport novel kind of
lead
child type level, but he's really successful and made a lot of money, and he's obviously just gone, I want to do this, I want to direct my own script, thanks very much. And Netflix just went, okay, sure. No, go back to writing novels, Matthew Riley, because you can't direct for shit.
Yep.
A couple of nice shots aside, no one is acting well in this film. The budget trick constraints are all there for you, and the script is dumb as fucking 2 planks of wood with nails through it. Don't bother.
No, it's really bad. If you're one of those people who wants to see how bad it is, you may find some.
I didn't hate it. I got a perverse entertainment out of
it.
I have to say, it's almost so bad it's good. Almost.
Yeah, which I struggle with the concept, but I know what you mean because it's so like, you know, like that. And that, if you like that, you're going to enjoy that more than the film, but it's still not worth sitting through the film.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, fair enough.
So there you are.
All right, my number 6 is my last English-speaking film on my list, believe it or not. My top 5 are all foreign language films.
Well, la-di-da, motherfucker.
Just
go
in
ahead.
Case you're like, oh, these guys. Hold on, yours. My number 6 is The Contractor with Chris Pine.
Oh, I almost watched that for this. Tell me about The Contractor, and obviously it sucks.
No, I'm right middle of the road.
Oh, okay.
About where I'd soft recommend, but I'm not quite there yet.
Yeah.
So The Contractor is pretty straightforward film directed by someone named Tariq Saleh.
Mm-hmm.
Saleh. And Chris Pine plays a guy who's been discharged involuntarily from the US Special Forces because of a disability that he's developed through an injury.
Right.
And he joins a private contracting organization with the prompting of his sort of fellow soldier in arms, Ben Foster.
Mm-hmm.
And they're working for Kiefer Sutherland. Kiefer Sutherland.
Oh, and they send 24 is there.
Him and Ben Foster and a couple of other dudes into Germany to basically perform a hit on a guy who has effectively the research to form this nasty virus that could kill everybody or a bomb that could kill everyone type stuff.
Okay.
But along the way, Chris Pine's character starts to question their orders. Like, hang on, are we really? This doesn't seem right for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. And then the mission goes awry and he's on the run in Germany and he's trying to get to a safe house and blah, blah, blah.
Doesn't sound terrible.
No, and it's fine. It's a little slow at the start. It gets really intriguing in the middle. The end is very silly.
Silly.
That's what I say. Very silly. Like how this all wraps up. I'm just like, what? Come on.
Yeah, see, that'll kill it for you.
Yeah, so I can totally see why this was dumped onto Amazon Prime and why it didn't get a cinematic release. It's fine. Chris Pine's fine. He's still got great hair.
Yeah, I love his Chris Pine. You know,
US military style sort of cut back. Watch it if that sounds intriguing. Don't if it doesn't.
Yeah. See, now you probably saved me from, because I had that one all set to go. I'm like,
I thought it might be on the list as well.
Yeah, because Chris Pine, baby. So, okay, fair enough. The Contractor,
The Contractor, yeah.
All right. Now, my number six, everyone, is a film that I heard that it was interestingly meta. It's called Chippendale Rescue Rangers.
Yep, okay.
Now, all right.
I've also seen it.
Yeah, you've seen it. So you could probably, did you see it with your daughter?
Yes.
Okay. So this is the thing, everyone. The reason I thought it might be interesting is that it's about Chip and Dale. Now, you may remember, if you're as old as me, that there used to be a cartoon, Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers, a TV show. And this thing takes off now that Chip and Dale are elderly and they've outlived their fame. And the plot encompasses like the cast of that whole rescue.
They've had a split.
There's Monterey Jack is one of the cast members. He's an actor. He gets himself into some difficulty because he's hooked on cheese that is their, you know, avatar for drugs. And the two must save him from being bootlegged, which is some reason where basically he goes into cartoon oblivion. Now, the idea here is that Dale has actually had what they call CGI reconstructive surgery or whatever.
To be 3D.
3D. And he's 3D. So he's actually animated like a modern day CG, like computer generated thing. And Dale has done it. Chip is the actual, is the one who's the more boring one without the red nose.
I couldn't remember who's who.
Yeah. Chip is still in the standard 2D. Okay. And the meta part of it where they are walking around Hollywood and they're sort of making fun of old cartoons and making gags about that.
Sort of old busted ass Sonic.
Yes. Yeah, so yeah, like one of the characters is the ugly Sonic, which was like, you know, before all the
It was abandoned Fuhrer. after the first trailer came out. Yep.
Yes. And now that was good. But and jokes like that are just a dime a dozen.
Peter Pan
keeps on going. And I was going,
but people love this fucking movie, man.
They do, don't they? I myself found it, although those things were interesting, they were too tedious to keep me interested. Does that make sense? I mean, I was just sitting there going, oh, well, I guess let's witness how Chip and Dale rekindle their relationship. And it's interesting that Chip is selling fucking insurance now and Dale is still like an old actor that goes to Comic Cons and hardly any people. That kind of shit. That should be more interesting than it was. And I was thinking to myself, what happened was at the end of the film, I'm sitting there going, maybe this is for kids, but the thing is, all of the concepts they're talking about are so old.
My daughter had no concept. I was chuckling, not laughing, chuckling sensibly at some places. And
yeah.
My daughter was like looking at me like, why is that funny?
Because if you're 10 years old or whatever watching this film, you don't get any of those old jokes. Yeah. So now it must be for me. But I also got the joke but didn't care. So I actually don't think this was well done. The idea was great and the premise is what made me get there, but I didn't
also,
like this.
You could tell it was a straight to Disney Plus film.
Yeah.
It's cheap as fuck looking.
There I guess
are some
CGI
sequences
now, yeah.
in the background where it's like, oh, that looks really bad. No matter the acting, like Seth Rogen is in a part. And there's a
That's
few other what, name
I,
actors.
That, those things that I like. And usually those things work out a bit because this is like, the idea here is that CGI characters exist among humans.
Real humans, yeah. A la Who Framed Roger Rabbit. And right. That's what people are saying. This is like, oh, the sequel to Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
And I wasn't expecting that level of quality, but I was expecting that level of interest. And oh my God, it just wasn't there. So I'm still not recommending
this. Yeah, look, it probably would have been a recommend for me if that sounded interesting, but if it didn't, or you're at all like, ugh, or you don't love Who Framed Roger Rabbit, then I would say steer well clear.
Yeah, this is not the thing.
It's not as clever as people are saying.
It's
not. I think people genuinely are just pleasantly surprised. I was just like, whoa, hey, who saw this coming?
Yes, and that's what, perhaps if I didn't know what it was and saw it, which never would have happened, I might be, oh, okay, well, there's something on the novelty that this that brought me through, but it just didn't. So, no, don't recommend Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers.
Whoopah!
Halfway point!
That's right, and you know what that means.
We do.
Uh-huh. It means that, speaking of top tens, gentlemen, if you would like your ball sack to be in the top 10 of your lady's last ball sacks that she liked...
Or top five, maybe.
Top five. You know what? If you want to be the best of the ball sacks that your lady or anyone that you encounter, then you need Manscaped. All right.
You do?
You do need Manscaped because the Manscaped 4.0, what's it called?
The 4.0 lawnmower, or as part of the performance package.
That's right. It's going to trim your sack.
Sorry. Performance package.
That added heaps to this read because that's going to heap you nice, trim, wicked, and really, it's just giving your woman the best dick and balls you can possibly give them. And
if there isn't better,
or you know what?
Your best partner.
What if you're the woman and you want your partner to have the best dick you ever saw?
What if you're a man who is just like, I'm tired of my man's hairs rubbing up against me?
Exactly. Or maybe you don't want you don't want to tickle her nose with that, boys. You want it to be fucking svelte, son. And the Manscaped 4.0 has the type of technology you need, including a ceramic blade with anti-nick technology. It looks cool as fuck.
It can wirelessly charge. You can use it in the shower.
In the shower, drain down them balls, baby. That's how it is. And also, it looks sweet on that counter of yours.
And if you get the performance package, you also get yourself a pair of sweet, sweet boxer shorts. Now, I'm not sure, but Manscaped have also done boxer shorts 2.0.
I've got them.
Which are brilliant.
I've got them.
Absolutely brilliant. I have taken to wearing them to bed at night because they're that comfortable.
Dude, my one that got sent was actually has a gold band. So I feel like I got Mike Tyson's dick. I feel it looks like boxer boxing shorts. It's fan-fucking-tastic. And frankly, you know, it's the best.
Ballsy.
Yeah, ballsy,
stupid,
exactly.
But ballsy.
There you are. Now, to get 20% off your Manscaped anything, you just got to go to manscaped.com and at checkout, put in the code CDPC20. And
also gives you free delivery.
Free delivery, 20% off, and beautiful balls. I don't know what you're still doing here, folks.
Yeah.
Just hit that bad boy directly.
And now, back to the countdown.
Whoopah!
All right, that's your six. Over to my five.
Word.
An Indian film which has much shout-out passion online.
Oh, my God.
Buzz, shall I say.
Go on, Paul.
It's called Triple R.
It's called RRR.
Whatever. Triple R, as far as I'm concerned. This film has, I think it's the best and worst of Indian cinema, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, interesting. Keep going.
Obviously, it's on your list, right?
Yes, it also went way higher.
Ooh. Here's what I didn't like about the film. Tell us
what it's about first.
It's about two guys on the opposite side of English colonization. So one guy's working for them and another guy who is part of whatever sort of
village. Indian fellas in the British-occupied India in 1920s. Yeah,
1920s. I wasn't even sure what year it was. And the guy who's not working for the English army is looking for a young girl who's been kidnapped from his village and taken by...
The Punisher.
The Punisher. But also, not just the Punisher, Wayne. About to blow your fucking mind.
Oh, go on.
Ray Elsa Stevenson. Schneider.
Is that Ilsa Schneider?
That was Alison Duty.
Because I was sitting there going, you know, I'd probably hit that. but like, you know, oh, is that her?
Yeah.
I didn't fucking know.
I didn't know either until I saw the end credits. I'm like, what?
Yep. All right. So
absolutely
Ray Stevenson.
Saw the Punisher, Ray Stevenson. But I'm like, whoa, that blew my mind. So they take this little girl, murder her mother. And so he swears vengeance.
Well, they didn't murder her. They just, or about to murder her, and then they knocked her out. Because the guy, because Ray Stevenson was like,
did she live?
They said, that bullet of yours that you're about to take her out with.
But then they smashed her with this thing, and clearly smashed her.
She was at the end.
Oh, was she at the end? Yeah. Oh, God. Okay. I just went, okay, that's going to kill anyone who's got a normal bone structure. But anyway, okay.
Yeah. Oh, look, it's, yeah.
Then it's effectively how these two form a friendship in rescuing some other kid, but they're eventually going to come at odds, as the music will tell you. Because one of the things I cannot stand, and I realize this is my thing, I don't like musicals. If you're new to the show, welcome. It's great to have you here. I can't do musicals. I cannot understand them by any stretch of imagination. When a character starts singing and then the rest of the characters start just falling to sync and dancing with or doing stuff in response, that drives me insane. The second level below that, which drives me not quite as insane, is when the music is just reflecting exactly what's happening on screen. So instead of telling us, we're just singing about it. They will one day be at odds. What good can come of this? Oh,
there's no telling whether this will end in bloodshed.
Yes.
My
God.
We only know this because it's a Hindi film, everyone. And a good portion of it is, of course, in Hindi. So it's subtitles, right?
Of course.
Even the English parts are subtitled or whatever, right? I don't know enough about Bollywood or Indian cinema to do this, but I know enough to know that the soundtrack of the singing, you have to not read the sound. You have to not read the subtitles in that bit because it's just it's mood music. They happen to just be telling you what the story is
but
going
they
on.
Don't.
Well, they repeat the song in different parts, and it's the same fucking lyrics. Yeah, so you mean so it's out
again
of...
like a musical. We fucking do a refrain of it in a different way.
Okay,
drives
okay.
me insane. Fucking hate it.
Now,
anyway,
go on, please.
This film sings when it's at its best because it's on Netflix in 4K,
yeah,
or ultra high def. And when these two are really badly green screened, but doing these death defying stunts and are doing ridiculously physics defying shit, I was entertained. This is kind of like the hard boiled. Of
Indian cinema
30 years later.
Agree.
So that part won me over. I'm like, yes, so entertaining when those scenes happen.
It's nuts.
And like when one dude's taken on literally a rioting crowd full of people. It's not possible by any stretch of the imagination, but is it entertaining? But yes.
Absolutely entertaining.
Same when they rescue the kid under the bridge and and then later on in the movie with the shit that they're doing and, you know, motorbikes flying through the air and they're like superheroes and it's fun and that's really cool.
Totally, totally.
But every time we fall into a song or when there's a moment when a key character is basically being whipped with an inch of their life, starts singing in his Braveheart moment and the entire crowd riots because of it, I was like, fuck this shit, I'm done.
Okay. Now, first of all, let me say I understand
I
you coming
laughing
along with that.
So hard at that scene.
Okay. Now, here's what... This is my number two, Paul. All right? I absolutely recommend this film. It is a 3-hour long film, everyone. It is...
It's also too long. It's also an hour long.
Agreed.
This film could have been cut 45 minutes easy, maybe an hour tops.
I agree completely.
And it would be a much better movie.
Now, here's where I'm oddly culturally sensitive, and it's very unusual for me.
It is.
This is apparently the third most expensive Indian film ever made. Supposedly, there is some truth to these two people having existed. It is a weird ass, sometimes it's magically surreal, sometimes it's a martial arts movie, sometimes it's an action movie, sometimes it's a fucking musical, sometimes it's a deep Bond of Brothers movie. It's every single lane that you could occupy in a movie, it's here, okay? And for me, every time I think I knew what the movie was going to do, it did something different. Possibly as a result of it being 3 hours long and having the room to do so.
I'm glad you enjoyed it. I'm glad. Like, I get it. I get why people love this movie. If you've got my... If you can't deal with music the way that I do...
Well, this is an interesting point, though, right? There is... If you see any Bollywood film...
And it's not just music. It's also the length. Everything's drawn out. Everything's over the top. It's like, come on. Not just the action. Good, should be over the top, but... Every dramatic scene plays an extra 2 minutes longer than it needs to.
Well, this is... Yeah, I would agree. It's bloated. But I think that in the same way that a lot of Asian cinema has wire work, which the Western population is not used to, it's a feature as opposed to just everyone expects it.
Crouching Tiger?
Yeah. In Bollywood, this sort of like musical, everyone's dancing thing is a thing in Bollywood cinema. And
I'd be fine with it at the end. That last sequence, that's fine.
I would put to you that the first musical sequence, which is...
Their brothers,
and they come
the
into
montage.
This, yes, they're basically a bunch of white people, English people, and they're persecuting the Indian locals and so on. And the two Indian leads that come in there get set upon by this foppish sort of British snarling kind of dude.
Oh, that's during the party.
Okay. Now that has the most context of any Bollywood dance number, okay? Because they're actually saying that, huh, these people are savages. They don't know anything about the foxtrot or the Charleston or your mother's snatch. And then these two go like, well, boom, 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 boom. They change the music and they start dancing. And then all the white women start dancing with them. Yep. Don't get me wrong. It's ridiculous in the context of it, right? But it actually did serve a purpose because they were trying to outdance the white people.
How about the whipping?
Now, the whipping happened.
You cannot tell me.
No, but what that was that he, yeah, if you take it for like a Western movie, it's not going to make sense. But I will tell you that as far as those things happen, I haven't seen a lot of Bollywood films, but it was.
I have.
Have you?
Yeah, I've seen too many.
Well, this is the thing. Usually Bollywood films, when there's a dancing scene, it's women chirping like, ding, 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 ding. It's like that. I'm sorry if it's not how it sounds, people, but to me, that's how it sounds, all right? There's none of that in here. The only women who sing are the white women, and I like that. Now. The scale of the film is what gets me, okay? There's literally thousands of extras. There's thousands of them because it's India and they're probably thousands of...
There's not thousands. There's hundreds.
There's fucking thousands. There's hundreds, man. That scene CG. Where there's 200 cunts. Yeah, okay, CG. Okay. All right. Yeah, all right. So fair enough, all right? What gets me is like, for instance, one scene, not a spoiler, but one scene where there's an attack on this particular gated sort of thing.
Early on in the film.
Right? It's literally like this truck comes along and you know it's like a Trojan truck which gets through the barriers and when it does a skid... On the truck are cages full of wild animals and the lead guy who just jumps out in slow-mo.
Okay, later on here.
What's cool about that is every single scene is played delightfully over the top, and I think the context of it being an Indian film allowed me to barrack for the film. I'm sitting there going, oh my God, I actually
you should watch more of these films then.
I reckon this is the only good one, bro. Because like most, any other one of the Bollywood films I've seen, it's usually dudes who are in a fucking army and they stand on top of a catapult bolter and they fire it in the air and he just kind of flies through it with the air and he's like, woo, and there's swords and it looks stupid on purpose. This didn't do that because every time that happened, I'm like, I want this scene to keep going. It's weird that you attack someplace with wild animals, which by the way, are not trained by you. They're just wild animals. So
can't backfire at all.
It does that. It sets something up. Well, yeah. And also,
like I said, this film's at its best when it doesn't worry about physics or things like that.
I would argue that the idea of the two leads becoming friends, it almost becomes a bromance, man. There's scenes
for sure,
right? And you know, as an audience member, because it's cards up and cards down storytelling, this is cards up when it tells you exactly that this guy is supposed to.
Well, eventually we see what this story is. Yep.
Right, but that is a much more deep story than the usual Bollywood type thing, right? And that's why I think this is actually presents you with the problem that you know these two will have to fight. So, but then the resolution of it later on is also satisfying. So I think there's actually quite a few impressive shots. And even though the CGI tigers look stupid,
lots of CGI looks stupid. See,
yeah, but it's gives it, there's some charm to it that still made
most
me
most expensive
film.
Indian film ever made, apparently. $80 million.
Third, I've heard. Third. Oh, third. I but that. I could be wrong. I could be wrong. It might be the most, actually. So it's not cheap, more importantly. And I don't know. I was saying holy shit, holy shit, holy shit over and over in the film. So I actually wildly recommend this
film. Took me like 8 sittings to watch. It was ridiculous.
Oh, no, it's long. It took me 2 sittings to watch it. But where they want you to be wowed, you are wowed, aren't you? Are you not? I mean, I recommend everyone actually watch this film.
Yeah, yeah. Again, I...
with an open mind.
But you have to be prepared for that. And I'm sorry. Like,
I understand. I understand completely.
Musicals, when you're doing your Braveheart moment and you just start singing in defiance, and I'm like, oh, God.
Well, the way that scene was played, I thought had enough context to give me... Yeah, okay. Well, nah, look, it's not going to work for everyone, but that was...
why it falls here for 5. Number 2 for Wayne, though, so
number
there
two,
you go.
Mate. Number 2.
And if you're at all... Look, it's worth seeing. I think we can all agree on that. So
yeah.
Check and it out.
I think the novelty of it being an Indian film that I didn't hate immediately, like, was good.
The best Indian film I've seen is, I think it's called Dungle, and it's about the first female wrestlers in India to win medals.
Oh yeah, that
really
sounds
good.
Interesting.
Really good. Well, much more grounded. The songs are far less on the nose.
Well, at the end of this film, there's a dance number as well, which intersperses between the epilogues of the film. And I'm like, what's this? And it's just Bollywood.
Yeah.
It's Bollywood.
That, again, that I can kind of be all right because it's kind of taken out of the narrative, sort of, even though it's interspersed.
It's presented, yeah. Yeah.
All right, going on. You're number 5, sir.
Number 5 is Spiderhead, everyone. Spiderhead.
Way too high. This film fucking sucks.
It's because all of them fucking blow. This still sucks.
This sucks.
I'm not started recommending films yet. I think this is a piece of shit. That's how bad my list is, everyone. Spiderhead has Thor in it, and it's about, it's about two inmates who... I don't know I assume it's set in the future. Not quite sure. I think it may or may not be.
We don't get much context because it's another low-budget fucking single-setting virtually film.
Yes.
Directed by Joseph Kosinski of Top Gun, Colin, Maverick fame and Oblivion.
Really?
Yeah.
All right, so it's got Miles Teller.
No visual language, style, nor interest in it whatsoever, and some shit CG. And really a storyline that feels like it should have been done in 30 minutes because it was based on a short story. This film sucks.
Oh, it's waffle thin. It's about these two inmates who form a connection when they grapple with their pasts because they're in this state-of-the-art penitentiary run by Chris Hemsworth, who is, I guess, supposedly a brilliant visionary who experiments on his subjects with mind-altering drugs. And he does this by putting this like unit on their back, which has different drugs in it.
Mm-hmm.
And he says to them, okay, well, here's the fucking scenario I'm putting you in. I'm going to do this. I'm going to administer this drug. I need your approval to do so. They say, yes, yes, boom. And he does it. And some drugs make you laugh regardless of the situation. Some of them make you angry. Pop, 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 pop. He's obviously doing all of that. I'm not quite sure why, but I think he's trying to develop a super drug that aids humanity. And he's testing it on these inmates.
Yeah, later on in the film it's revealed. No, it's a spoiler. Continue.
Okay. Well, I can't remember, to be honest with you, because this movie's fucking shit. the best thing about the film is that there's a great soundtrack. There's a lot of Supertramp, a lot of Michael McDonald, which I quite like. I know.
Ooh, yeah.
Well, this is the...
Ching, ching.
Ooh, yeah. I love that shit. So Chris Hemsworth, it's interesting to see him play a supposed intellectual character. He is a charming man.
Yep.
Okay? He's a charming man, and he looks great on screen. And he does, there's a few in-jokes where he's like, oh yeah, good-looking people don't deserve this and this. I say this having benefited a few times myself. So there's a bit of that going on. And I didn't hate it to start with, but there's massive flaws in this. For example, at some stage, I don't think this is a spoiler, the inmates no longer give consent to being drugged. And then, literally, if you were in this position, all you do is you smash that unit that's on your back that's administering the drugs. Mm. No one thinks to do that. Mm.
Good
ever.
Point. Good okay? point. Yep.
So it's like, it's sort of, it had a good enough idea that could have worked, but it just ran out of steam. And it became, ugh. So by the end of the film, I'm like, fuck off.
Yep. Right there with you. The further the film went, the worse it got. Yeah, Spiderhead was terrible. Would have been my number 8.
I don't think it even had a, if it had a point, it's like consent is a lie. I don't know what it is.
Crap film. My number 4, not a crap film. My number 4 is a celebration of the long shot, which my number 10 was very much poorly done by. This is called Beyond the Infinite 2 Minutes, a Japanese film.
Oh, tell me about it.
Beyond the Infinite 2 Minutes basically follows a guy. So it's set in a Kyoto apartment building with a cafe at the bottom.
Okay.
And the guy who owns and runs the cafe lives a couple of stories up.
Okay.
And everything takes place in that building.
All right.
And he finishes work one day and he goes upstairs and he's hunting around for his pick to do his, play his guitar because he's in a band.
Oh, yeah.
And his screen of his Apple monitor turns on and he himself is talking to himself. And he says, hey, I'm you from 2 minutes in the future downstairs on your screen downstairs. Here's what you need to do now. So his future self is telling him what to do.
And what is he telling him to do?
He's just saying, you need to come downstairs now. Your pick is there. He finds his pick.
Oh, okay.
So and then he says, okay, yep. Come downstairs and now you need to talk to yourself to continue the future as the way it needs to be.
Hmm.
So he runs downstairs, talks to himself upstairs, and then the film. So his two monitors have this link 2 minutes into the future. And
what?
So he gets other characters involved. And they eventually work out, what if we point the monitors at each other and we'll get an infinite loop of 2 minutes into the future with it getting smaller and smaller and smaller into the background.
Oh.
That's the premise.
Okay.
This film, that's okay. It's meant to be a comedy sci-fi.
Okay.
The problem is this film's not funny at all.
Well,
there's
hard
not
with
one single funny bit in this movie. Not one time did I laugh. I thought it was a pure sci-fi film until later when I read, oh, we thought this was really funny. And what a funny moment this was. Like, that wasn't funny. That was fucking stupid.
Do you think if you were a native Japanese speaker,
maybe,
you
maybe.
Might?
I can't speak to the cultural relevance of it. What is brilliant about this movie is it's presented as one shot.
Oh.
And so when we follow this guy upstairs, the camera follows him. And you will know, Wayne, maybe not from experience, but Japanese buildings tend to be very cramped and small.
Oh, yes.
Because real estate is at a premium.
Absolutely.
In all these big cities. And so the director had to, who by the way, this film was made for $35,000 Australian.
What?
Yep. And it's all the actors in it are from a local theatre production company.
Wow.
And he's part of that company and he conceived this and co-wrote it with
That's more interesting.
Bloke. And it's all done with a camera strapped to the back of an iPhone on a selfie stick. And
huh?
So in over the end credits, we see how this film's made, where he's literally crawling over other people to get the shot that there was in the movie and then he's moving it around.
How does it look?
Look, you can tell it's low budget. You absolutely can.
Okay.
But good enough.
Yeah, no, that's okay.
My problem is the filmmaking's exemplar, the storyline, eh. And
oh,
it
really?
Kind of gets to a point where it's like, ugh, okay, yeah. I don't think they thought it through that well, and it kind of deus ex machina's out of it. It's way out of it by the end. But very interesting, very engaging, worth a look from the filmmaking perspective alone. Beyond the Infinite 2 minutes is my number 4.
Solid stab by the sounds of things. All right, you're recommending it?
Recommend it, yeah. Here's where I'm definitely... Look, Triple R I'm recommending as well, if you're into that way it sounds. And likewise, this one really, if you're into the way it sounds. Same for 3. To be honest, same for all the films. There's nothing here I'm like, regardless of what you're into, other than maybe my number 1, you should watch this movie.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, my number 4 is like right on the fence. Depends on who you are. It's Jackass Forever.
That's only recommendable to people who are into that humor.
Exactly. Now, here's what it is, people. If you don't really want to engage heavily with the film and you're looking to just have a laugh, Jackass Forever is exactly like all the other Jackasses, except it's all the same dudes, but it's 10 years later, and they are doing essentially the same thing. Various sized...
With a new layer of people.
Yeah, there's a girl this time who does a couple of things.
Very minor until one moment.
Yeah, mostly them, but it's just various sized people getting hurt over and over and other cast members laughing around them. There's a lot of penises in the film.
Oh, my God. So much peen.
So much peen. There's a dude wearing a cup and having various levels of impact set upon it, including a heavyweight fighter punching it.
They are funny.
A softball pitch, a hockey puck at full speed, pogo stick bounces on it, and there's no way this dude has functioning balls after this. Literally, the pogo stick actually makes his balls bleed.
They send Johnny Knoxville to hospital in this movie.
Right. Now, that was probably... This is towards the end of the film, and you see it sort of in the trailer. Throughout the film, they light a fart underwater with an oxy torch. That's quite funny. You accidentally shit yourself. Fine. Other people are shitting themselves as well in the film. The thing that made me gag was one dude drinking like a gallon of pig semen. Oh, I was like, ah, oh, fuck, this is hard. And it's, I'm the guy who can eat while you say any nasty shit in front of me. I don't give a fuck. But I was like, ugh, that bothered me the most. The stunt Paul is talking about is that Johnny Knoxville literally goes into a bullfighting ring or whatever, a rodeo ring. And this massive bull fucking flips him, hits him and flips him. It turns out it breaks his wrist, breaks his rib, has a concussion, this, that, whatever. And the only thing, all through the film, everyone is laughing at everything that happened.
Yeah.
If you had these people for friends, you'd hate them, right?
Yes.
You'd hate them. They're just doing nasty shit. You step out of your trailer and they hit you with something, you know, shit like that, right? And I suppose for the film, you're like, okay, look at these people. There is something funny about dudes just laughing at each other and nasty shit happening if you're not that concerned about the person. But when Johnny Knoxville gets hit by the ball, everyone doesn't laugh, which means that was hard, right? He actually flipped in the air and went down. So he's unconscious.
It's
all
shot in
4K
and it's gloriously high definition.
Yes.
If that matters to you.
It does. And what I would say about the film is it's okay, but I've seen grosser shit literally in other films, in the previous Jackass films.
This is the only Jackass film I've watched.
One. I've seen them all, unfortunately.
And I was interested enough to get through to the end. So there you go.
Yeah, I think because they're all older now, there's a layer on top of it where you're like, can they still do it? Is it still nasty? It is all still nasty, but it's still just a collection of like funny bits. I don't really care for the Jackass movies as such. Dirty Grandpa?
Oh, God, shit.
That was, I don't like watching that shit because it's real and it's people, you know? Yeah. So I just, it's not my cup of tea. Like I said, if you like the Jackass films, go ahead and watch it. If you're anyone else, then eh.
The bit that made me laugh the hardest was when they've set them all on this group of couches that were spinning or whatever else.
Did you like that?
And one of them is fitted with a, so they tell the competitors, with a
airbag explosion, basically
an air rod. Yeah. It's going to thrust them into the
Yeah.
And it turns out they're all fitted with it. And of course, Wee Man gets pushed the hardest because he's...
Wee Man is the short little
person? The little person, yes.
Oh, God. That's, to me, I'm sitting there going... Because I'm like, so here's a little person who's getting the same fucking heat as everyone else, right?
And but he weighs half.
So he goes in the air, right? And it's like...
How do I think that's okay?
I know. I was sitting there going, oh, look at this. But the thing is, he's obviously doing it willingly and it's part of the thing. And I've heard Steve-O, the guy, one of the other guys, like, they don't get that many points on the back of the movie. Like, this movie actually makes a lot of... Johnny Knoxville is the guy, right? It's his thing. He gets the most of the money. Sure, he gets unconscious and fucked up all the time, but any of them could at the time.
I would have thought, to this kind of shit, you need to be paid a lot of money. Because otherwise, you're a fucking idiot.
Yeah, look, I'm sure that none of them are poor, but, like, the thing where your balls get repeatedly slammed and shit like that, right? Like, I'm thinking of that guy, like, going, who is he? Because clearly you're famous
someone
as a
someone who
result.
Doesn't want children. Right. Or has had as many children.
I mean, I don't
want
children, but I would never let you do that to my balls, Paul. So, not again. Yeah, so. Again, they're all insane. It's all just abuse at a certain stage.
Yeah, sure.
So, I'm.
It's just jokes you play on your mates taken to the nth level.
Exactly. I don't recommend this film unless you already like Jackass. See? That's how hard I'm going. I
absolutely recommend my number three to those who are of the horror persuasion.
Uh-huh.
It's a Taiwanese horror film. It's their stab at the violent zombie film. It's called The Sadness.
The Sadness.
This is based... Okay, I don't think it's given any credit, but there's absolutely zero doubt this film is based on a Garth Ennis comic called Crossed.
Okay.
Crossed follows a outbreak of whatever it is where anyone who's afflicted by this gets like kind of a scar down the middle of their forehead and across it.
Okay.
So they're crossed.
Crossed.
And then they just proceed to do the most murderous, depraved shit to anyone who's not crossed.
Are they acting like zombies though?
They're not zombies. They're clever. They know what they're doing.
Okay.
They're intelligent still. Okay, got it. So they're not mindless things anymore.
Brains,
they're like, I'm going to fuck you. I'm going to skull fuck you. Like,
oh, really?
That's the kind of shit that Crossed goes. And it's what this film does. So it's set on the island of Taiwan and it follows a young, attractive couple who are separated. She's gone to work for the day. He's at home when it's meant to be a bit like COVID.
Okay.
So this pandemic crosses. There's some warning signs on the TV. Oh, this continues. This could happen. Thing could go south. And it goes south in a big way.
Mm-hmm.
And then things like batter being poured on someone's head and their face just sloughing off.
Okay.
That kind of shit.
Yep.
And then this one sexual predator of his older businessman hitting on this young, beautiful woman.
Mm.
He gets infected and so he just starts pursuing her across the city, threatening to do this and killing anyone who gets in his way, threatening to do things. But imagine a horde of these people chasing you. It's you would hate it, Wayne. You would fucking hate it.
Absolutely, but that's fine.
But it does have some really dark stuff. Probably when I saw the trailer, I'm like, holy shit. And I was expecting even worse than what we got, so I was a little bit underwhelmed.
What would you say is the best thing about the film? Like, an aspect of it? Is it just
nihilistic?
Nihilistic, okay. Yeah. All right, cool. So, look, yeah.
This film, if you've got half a brain, you know exactly where it's going.
Yeah.
So it's not going to surprise you in
but
that
it's entertaining,
way.
Right?
But it will surprise you in terms of how far the Taiwanese film industry is willing to go.
Really?
Yeah.
That is always... I find that the case with these Korean films as well. You're like, oh, they went even further than I thought, you know? So that's why... Okay.
Well worth a look. And I think it might be on Shudder at the moment.
What's it called?
The Sadness.
The Sadness. Yep. Got it. Nice. My number three, I absolutely... Here's where I start recommending films.
Hey, oh!
Three. So everyone, Paul told me about this film.
Hey, oh!
Even better, right? And I was like, all right, let's just give it a try. It's called The Bad Guys.
Yeah, it's good.
Fucking hell, is it great? All right, yeah. It's an animated film, everyone. It's got fucking Sam Rockwell in it.
No, this is Automatic Wayne.
Automatic, cool, awesome. And, you know, Awkwafina, Paul loves her.
Yeah,
a few other people. It's about this group of animals. One's a wolf, one's a snake, one's a fucking tarantula, one's a motherfucking shark, and another one is a piranha. And they are bad guys. And it's made from a children's book, which I actually have seen.
I've read the first one of the 20 of them.
Oh, the 20 of them? Shit, yeah. I didn't know that. Now, what's interesting is the kids' book kind of looks like shit. Like, the characters are just ass-drawn, like a lot of kids' films.
I didn't think that.
Yeah, I thought it was shit. But, by comparison to this film, none of the characters look the same as the book. They all actually have been developed and, you know, whatever, visual inquiry and so on. So it's, like, amazing. But the first thing I noticed about it is how it's shot. So this guy, I don't know who the director is. What's his name? It's not written here.
I should have had this on my list.
But I don't. He's no one I've ever heard of before. It is he's got a very naturally fly looking style. Like, what happens is these bad guys go and rob banks and take down scores and stuff like that. Of course, in a very child friendly way. But the camera follows them out of a diner and keeps sweeping past them. And like Sam Rockwell or the wolf is like wearing a white suit. He's kind of cool and this and that. There are fart jokes. There are cool artistic flourishes. Yeah. They're they put them all in driving sunglasses before a car chase and they start nodding their heads for two beats and then the car goes off. It's very well done. Like, yeah. it looks and the style of the camera and how it works, awesome voice performances, but it's like an animated cross between Reservoir Dogs and Ocean's 11, I would say. And Sam Rockwell does dance. But
I forgot that part.
Yeah. And it looks a bit like he's not as fly as when he actually dances, but it's like his character does, and like, he does some of the same moves he does. The plot twists and the developments in the film, because I was sitting there going, okay, well, this is cool for the first act, but what's going to be interesting about it? Like, what it does do, because Moss from fucking the IT Crowd, Richard Ayoade, he's actually one of the characters as well. It does some things that I didn't expect, and sort of, I was sitting there going, oh, it's a kid's film and it's a kid's book. So what's the point of this show? What's it going to teach you? And I guess the thing that it teaches you is that you know, there's the altruism of being good actually gives you kind of the tingly feeling that makes you want to be good. So that's why it became a film, right? But the execution of the whole film, I'd say enthralled is a strong term, but I loved the whole thing. I was waiting for the next scene, This is executed so well that it's a pleasure to watch.
Oh, I'm glad you enjoyed it. I was right there with you. We took my daughter to see it for her birthday back
in April. Cool.
And she dug it, and we dug it. And so it's one of those rare films which both parents and children...
Which is the goal.
Or children, primarily, and parents can enjoy.
Oh, no, this is absolutely that. And I was obviously just watched it alone, but I was, like, genuinely, like, really impressed.
An animated film game this high on the list, that's
huge.
That probably speaks volumes about the rest of your list.
It does. So The Bad Guys is nothing but good.
All right, my number two is a Spanish film, which finished watching it last night with the wife... It's called Valley of the Dead or Mal Nacidos. It's directed by Alberto de Toro and Javier Ruiz Caldera.
Does Patsy like horror films?
She likes zombie films, weirdly enough. That's the one thing that she'll allow us to watch. So she's into Walking Dead. And so I suggested this one. This is set during the Spanish Civil War. So just before the days of World War II break out. So 37, 38. And it effectively follows one guy from the side that ends up winning the war. And he's been given a job by his uncle, who is the head of the army, to go and deliver a message. And he's going to go through occupied territory by the rebels. And the rebels take him prisoner. But then it happens that they're in this valley where the Germans have gotten permission from the nationals to bomb it with this, or at least spread this agent that causes the dead to come back to life. Okay. So we get this mismatch of opposing sides of the war who have to join together to survive a zombie apocalypse. Really good special effects in terms of the blood squibs and whatever they do. It's really coolly put together. It's violent. You get unpredictable deaths. You know, you kind of think, without giving too much away, that this particular character in every Hollywood film dies early because he's in a position of power. Doesn't. You know, that kind of thing. Or this person who, oh, they've earmarked this person to be around for a while, gets killed straight away. Okay. So it's unpredictable.
I can see why that would impress you.
Fun. It's just a fun, like, it should be a horror film. It's not that, like, there's blood squibs going off everywhere and blood spurting into the air, but you don't see people getting torn to pieces and whatever else.
Yeah.
And it's smart enough and savvy enough to give nods to American great zombie films. Like, there's one moment where a character says, well, the rumor goes, when there's no room left in hell, the dead will walk the earth, which is a line directly from Dawn of the Dead.
Reference.
Yeah, so it's smart enough to pay homage when it needs to. Entertain characters, you want them to pull through and win.
Sounds like your thing.
Yeah.
Sounds like your
very
thing.
Very good.
Time.
I know there's not much to say about it other than if you're into
a zombie film.
A zombie film, into action film. So think Zack Snyder's Day of the Dead. Sorry, Dawn of the Dead is the closest thing probably to this movie. It's not as scary. It doesn't try to be that scary. It just tries to be entertaining, and it is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can't fault it then.
Yeah.
Other than it being a zombie film that I hate.
I didn't recommend to you, Wayne. This is an action film.
Okay.
First and foremost.
Okay, that's better.
Yeah.
Nice.
It's just the fact that it happens to be that most of the time they're fighting zombies, not other soldiers.
The title once again?
Valley of the Dead.
Valley of the Dead.
It's on Netflix, came out about a week ago.
Cool. Okay, well, RRR is where I put my number two.
Number two, damn. All right, so running back through my 10 through two and then revealing my number one. Number 10, Night Ride. Number 9, Black Fuck Off Light. 8, Dash Cam. 7, Men. 6, Run. The Contractor. 5, RRR. 4, Beyond the Infinite 2 minutes. 3, The Sadness. 2, A Valley of the Dead. And my number one is a film which we did get an advanced screening of, which I'm glad to now be able to talk about, delivered to us. I think I talked to you about it, Wayne, whether you watched it or not. It's called The Innocents. Or, here we go. Die Ausglitch.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
It sounds like a what, German film?
A European
film. European, okay. Right.
It's a Scandi film. I think Norwegian film.
Mm-hmm.
And it's effectively follows a group of kids who live in these big apartment buildings that live right next to each other.
Yeah.
And start to develop powers.
Okay. I'm in.
That's the simple premise.
Sure.
And if you don't want to know anything more about it, then just go ahead and watch the film because it's well filmed. It's well paced. You give a shit about these poor kids, some of which don't meet the nicest of fates.
Oh, so it's... What kind of film is this? Is it a superhero film? Is it horror?
Well,
is it?
Yeah, it's somewhere between those two genres.
Really?
Yep.
Huh.
You might consider this to be like X-Men at the very earliest iteration of their powers. Like imagine 7 to 8 to 9-year-olds up to, I guess, probably 9 is the youngest kid in it, up to, say, 16-year-olds finding their powers for the first time.
Where did you hear from this film?
I'd read about it and I'd seen the trailer and then it was passed on to us with our good friends from Anarchy.
Fantastic. Sorry, once again, the title?
It's called The Innocents in English and look, I'm not selling it real well because I don't want to spoil it, but it has a 97% positive rating on Rotten Tomatoes.
That's pretty big.
It's massive.
Is it gory, Paul?
Not overly so.
Not overly so.
No, there's absolutely some disturbing moments, though, in this film. And I don't want to spoil those because
they're really
impactful. And, yeah, it's kind of... When you watch a film about kids, you expect the kids will generally be okay. But what if kids are perpetrating violence on kids?
Interesting. Yeah, yeah. Oh, okay, cool.
And we just talked about Black Phone, where that happens in that movie, too.
Hmm.
So you kind of expect there to be a certain level of sacrosanct safety to children in a film, but this film doesn't play by those rules.
Excellent. That actually is really interesting. Mm. The Innocents. Fair enough. Okay. My number, my 10 to 1, everyone, is 10, The Man from Toronto. 9, How to Please a Woman. 8, The Lost City. 7, Interceptor. 6, Chippendale Rescue Rangers. 5, Spiderhead. 4, Jackass Forever. 3, The Bad Guys. 2, RRR. And my number one. Now, Paul, last week you did say to me that because there's so much goddamn content out there, I could include a TV show in this movie
list. I did.
And I'm going to tell you about a show that I had heard about on the line. It's called The Old Man.
Okay? Yes. Yeah. I'm interested. Yeah. Jeff Bridges, right?
Yes. Jeff Bridges and John Lithgow are in this film. And what it's about is, so Jeff Bridges is an old man, the titular old man. And he has absconded from the CIA years ago, and they do flashback to it. I was also got Amy Brennerman from NYPD
Blue.
That's
his girlfriend, right?
Yes, right. Now, he absconded from CIA. He lives off the grid. And then one day, an assassin arrives and just tries to take him out. And he's kind of cool because he's an old guy, and it really plays up at the beginning how old he is. He has to take a piss in the middle of the night. He's got two.
I have to take a piss in the middle of the night.
I know. That's why I was like sitting there going, "Yep, I know how this is going to end." Right? And by that I mean my life. So, but he's got these two cool. Like, he's got two dogs with him, you know, and he's like, and they sort of protect him, and he takes them everywhere he goes, and he's definitely an old, oh, tired old man. Right now. Why it's cool is that he's got he has a daughter which you only hear about on the phone, and I'm not going to spoil anything more about this, but John Lithgow plays the actual CIA guy who is then tasked, they have a history together, but he's tasked with hunting him down. And the reason the show is so good is after it hits you in terms of dealing with old age and the sadness therein to start with, it really means quite a lot. You then get to a very intense bunch of fights with this guy. Now there's a bunch of young dudes tracking him down, but because he's kind of a old-ass gangster kind of guy, he is tough enough to survive by the skin of his teeth kind
Hopefully
of thing.
It's better than anything filmed with Liam fucking Neeson.
It's definitely the anti-Neeson in terms of like how this works. It's directed by John Watts, a couple of these things, the Spider-Man guy. So yep. I submit to you, watch the first episode and see if it doesn't grab
I'm
you.
I'm on it.
Because sure. There's seven, I think, episodes in total. It is currently up to episode 6, so this is very current. It's like the show twists left and right as it goes along, and the scenes themselves are actually really compelling. And because he's dealing with, I will say this, as the show goes on, he looks younger and younger and younger. Now, I don't know if that's like he moves a lot more easily.
Maybe.
Perhaps. He moves, it's almost as though having to deal with this nasty shit wakes up the fighter in him.
Yeah.
And Amy Brenneman is sort of a love interest, but sort of not. And I initially thought to myself, she's too young for him. You know, like, she wouldn't be interested in this bearded old god-looking motherfucker. It turns out he's actually in real life 77. She is about 59.
No, that's a long way between.
It's a long way between, especially when
Although
you're that
I'm not
age.
Sure, Wayne. You should be judging.
So, in joke, everyone, not that in though. Again, like your one, I don't want to tell you too much to give it away, but I'll tell you this. I didn't expect to like it so much.
Okay.
And it does, the opening episodes does open a little slow, but it's for a very specific purpose.
All right.
And I'm still way in. I jump on these every time they release.
Cool.
So, yes.
Here's a little side note, which I can now edit because I just gave enough of a pause.
Go on.
Do you think you've seen enough other TV shows this year so far to talk about ranking them from worst to best?
I've certainly seen a lot of shows. I don't know if
whether you've seen them all the way through to the conclusion or not, I dropped out this one. It's my number 10 after one episode because it was shit.
Yeah, yeah. Probably. I've seen a few. I've seen enough.
Because we could do that as an episode. We're halfway through the year. Here's our TV shows we're recommending because we don't do a big recap till the end. And I feel like we short thrift things a little bit.
We do a bit. You're right. I reckon I could get there, Paulie.
What do you reckon? How's next week?
Why not?
All right, next week. That's what we're doing. There's Done. Our topic for next week's episode.
Shows to recommend. Actually, Ash, my cousin, did recommend that we do a show called like Movies You Should. Kind of like movies that, because there's all classic episodes of TV shows that people don't necessarily get onto because they know the show has ran like 4, 6, 7, 8 seasons.
Anything I think you've watched this year for the first time.
Yeah. So it doesn't have to be from this year, but
no,
you've watched
but
it.
But as long as you've watched it this year.
Word.
Like if you started watching Buffy this year, great. But yeah. You haven't. So don't include Buffy.
Yeah. Our top 10 TV recommends that we watched this year.
Yeah.
But something shorter.
Because you have to fit it on a title card.
Exactly.
Yes. All right, cool. That's there's something sorted before we normally do. But otherwise, that's our list for the top 10 last in. Big episode, this one. Lots of films to talk about and recommend. But what about what you've seen recently? And we'll do that to wrap up this episode in a segment that we call the Pop 10.
Talk about.
Pop 10.
Talk about.
Pop 10.
Kicking off this week's Pop 10 with Adam Allure because he's top level page of the show and an all-around great guy. Here's his review of Top Gun.
Oh, shit.
Not Top Gun, colon, Maverick, just Top Gun.
Oh.
Though I enjoyed it for the most part, the repeat songs of Take My Breath Away and Danger Zone were so overplayed I wanted to stab my eardrums.
And he won't like the sequel.
An okay movie. That is overrated.
Look, if you watch a 1986 film now, I don't expect you to have the magic that...
I concur.
You know what I'm saying?
That film is overrated. I get it. 100%. B Dizzle, Billy Dunham from the We Watch the Thing podcast. Great show. Do check it out. Being sick as a dog. Sorry, Billy. Hope you're feeling better soon, mate. So re-binge the greatest television show of all time. Whoa. Nathan For You. I've never even heard of this show.
I have heard of this show.
Including the feature length Finding Francis, one of the funniest, most touching and powerful documentaries ever.
Nathan, for you, I found the lead character a little too annoying. He's just giving shit to other people, actual characters, like actual actors.
Right.
Like it's not for me, but I only gave it one episode, so you know it's very likely this could be much better for someone else.
All right, Stu or Robert Stewart from the Stewart Orders podcast said, "I watched The Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou, and I'm sure Wes Anderson movies are for someone. Maybe people who unironically like the MST3K movies, mystery movie. I don't know.
You got me,
but they aren't for me.
You know, Steve, that Life Aquatic,
Science Theater 3000.
Right. Life Aquatic. I watched half of it, wanted to get back to it, never did, forgot it completely.
Fair enough. Troy Spinner said, "Top Gun: Maverick was one of the best times I've had in a cinema in a long time."
Agree.
Fair enough. Dan Brennick from the Netflix and Swill podcast said, "Two Lava, Two Lantula." Yes, this is a real title of the movie. Steve Guttenberg is doing his best Ian Ziering impression as he hams his way through lava lantula infested Florida.
Excuse me, two lava, two lantula. Yes. The fucking worst thing I've ever heard.
Philip Wilson said, "Men, why?"
Sounds like you agree. Go
that
on.
That did make me laugh a lot. Dylan Nikolovsky said, "If you like Ukrainian horror films about a man killing people in the cinema and eating eyeballs, then The Last Matinee is for you."
Excuse me, Ukrainian?
Uruguayan?
You're Uruguayan, yeah.
Sorry to all the Uruguayans listening to this show.
Yeah, the two of you.
Last Matinee, I watched it. I think I talked about it in the last Top Ten last time. It's all right.
It's all right.
Nicholas Haskins from Nikolai's Kitchen. Good. Thank you, sir. So the last thing I saw was Thor, Love and Thunder. And yes, I'm into the colon because fuck the colon joke.
Thank you, Nick.
Absolute trash. Thor is literally a parody of himself. Watiti is not fucking funny. I think Nick missed the memo. It's like you get one sentence to review a film. Thor can't simultaneously be so inept and absent-minded but focused and determined. Pick a fucking lane. Stop making the characters spew endless one-liners.
Fair. I didn't love that show.
Mike Margosian said, RRR, what an amazing movie, three-hour epic that flies by.
Couldn't agree more-ish.
Mario Leon said, "Cha-cha, real smooth. Cooper Rafe is a talent and Dakota Johnson is fire. A must watch and guarantee be on your top 10 of 2022. Come on, Paul. Don't break my heart."
I haven't heard of that one.
I'll have to check that one out. And lastly, Erica San Pedro said, "Elvis, still very much traumatized by Tom Hanks's accent. A great Elvis performance by Austin Baker and Austin Butler. And fuck Baz Luhrmann." Yes! I agree with that.
Wait, she's saying his shit?
That's not clear. So great performance. Tom Hanks, terrible. Baz Luhrmann, fuck him.
I've heard good things about Elvis, man. No, I know. We got invited to it. But
whatsoever.
Yeah, I know. I might give it a try.
Yeah, please do and bring it to the next top 10 last thing because I ain't watching that fucking shit. And that is it for this week's episode of the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews Podcast. It's been a big one. Episode 381.
We've already talked about
what's happening for episode 382. So Wayne, how do the good folk get in touch with us? Let us know their feedback about the show or indeed things we've talked about.
You can Google the Countdown Podcast and you'll probably find our website, although I'm not sure how our Google alerts have...
Countdownpodcast.com.
Yep. Or we send us an email at thecountdownpodcast@gmail.com. You'll find all our socials when you Google us.
And that is it for us today. Thank you so much for joining us yet again. Tell a friend about the show. Let's get the countdown way for people going out there. And if you haven't reviewed us on whatever platform, listen to us, iTunes, Spotify, Good Pods, please take the time to do so. It will really help the show out. And that is it from us. My name is Paul.
My name is Wayne.
And this has been the Soundboard
Vindication.
When Wayne has a foreign language film higher than me,
right?
We will catch you next time.